Voices, Washington.
So I like what I see when I'm looking at me when I'm walking past the mirror. Don't stress through the night at a time and my life ain't worried about if you feel it. Feel it. Got my head on straight, I got my vibe right. I ain't gonna let you kill it. See, I won't change my life. My life's just fine.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're taking a closer look at the black beauty business. What does it take to break into it and how it's evolving? My guests are Jermaine Bold Leftridge. She is founder of the Ubiquitous Beauty, Hair and Health Expo. Of course, that is this weekend at the Washington Convention Center. And if you want more information about that, you can find it at ubiquitousexpo.com. Also, right in studio, Monique Rodriguez. Owner of Miel Organics.
Mayel.
Not me. My. Oh, me, oh, my. Mayel Organics. And you've seen those products in just about everywhere you may shop. Lines are open. If you have a question about the beauty business, they're willing to tell it to you straight at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Joe calling from... Whoops, Joe, give us a call back if you can. Let's go to Kristen. Kristen calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I'm calling because I actually just starting a supply business that is focusing on all natural and organic hair and skincare. And I know you guys were speaking or were about to speak about some finance options or, you know, how financing works. So I'm definitely interested on your guest's take on that, as well as navigating the business space, especially in a space that's so dominated by people that are not of color.
Monique, talk to me about going from kitchen to cash and really putting the money together to finance this business. And when did you actually start it?
I started in May of 2014.
Okay, so you've been in business for 2 years.
For 2 years, correct.
How did you finance it?
So I self-financed it. And to be honest with you, I use my nursing checks. You know, I was a nurse prior to doing this, and I made very good money. So I would use my paychecks. I would every 2 weeks that I got paid, I put it towards my business, you know. And I started in May, but it actually took a few months, probably 6 months prior to for me to, you know, have enough money to launch everything, because I would do everything little by little. So let's say in January, the first paycheck, I would buy some ingredients or, you know, buy product or whatever it was, I would buy it little by little until I was able to finally launched the website. I made payments on there on the website. And then once the website was up and running and we started selling product, I used the money from our profits to reinvest in our business. And that's what I think is important, that, you know, we tell entrepreneurs, is that when you start making your profits, reinvest that into your business. It's called bootstrapping. You know, don't go out there and buy a purse or some shoes when you first start seeing real money. You know, reinvest that in your business, because I'll tell you, me firsthand, I will invest everything, especially if I'm passionate about it, and marketing, whatever it is that I have to invest in, because if I see it that it's going to be great, then I'm passionate about investing my money in there and making sure that, you know, basically, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
She made a good point.
Because I wanted to ask you also, again, we're talking about literally two different generations of entrepreneurs in this business. How did you fund yours?
Self-funding.
Really?
Yes. I've never had a bank loan. And I'm a serial entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe in the Nike theme, just do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm very unorthodox in how I do things. You know, I had a client that tell me one time, he said, if he had been an educated man, he would not have been a millionaire. And that's, and I looked at him and he said, because what I didn't make sense. Oftentimes we overthink a process, you know, and we talk ourselves out of it. And I'm like Monique, I'm a saver. And so I will save my money and I do what I can afford to do. Mm-hmm. And the business that she's getting ready to break into is very challenging because there are a lot of people that's in it that does not look like us.
Mm-hmm. But even if they are dealing with products for us.
Exactly. But there's a lady in Waldorf, and she is a minority-owned beauty and barber supply, and that's how I got a chance to meet Monique. And Paula is very successful, and she came and talked with me and 5 years ago, and she's still in business doing extremely well. You just have to manage your money and make sure that your credit is on point. And that's why I wanted to do Ubiquitous, too, because it's very important that we keep strong credit scores, because when you have a strong credit score, you can go get a loan. Okay. People will loan you money.
Kristen, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Andre calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. Whoops, Andre, give us a call back if you will. When you, Monique, talk about self-financing and putting this together, you have come a really long way in 2 years. Mm-hmm. You found a niche that no one else seemed to find. But in this 2 years, if you could name something that, if you could go back and redo it or undo it, what would it be?
If I can go back, actually, I wouldn't say I wouldn't redo anything, because I say that because, everything that I've gone through in business has only made me a stronger person today.
Explain that. Give me an example.
So basically, when you start up a business, it's trial and error, from dealing with people that don't want to work with you, bad manufacturers. You have to learn. Sometimes you got to learn stuff the hard way. And that's the only way that you'll learn to appreciate things. And I say that to this day, I appreciate everything that we've been through in business, because me and my husband, we work together, because it's helped me learn so much about the business. And if you don't make mistakes, how would you learn?
Mm-hmm. So what was the big mistake that if you could name it, what would you say it was?
One of the biggest mistakes, I would say, basically not researching enough, because initially when we dealt with a manufacturer that, gave us such a very hard time in the beginning, and it's because, we didn't know. And I'm not the type of person, I don't really like to ask for help. I had to learn to start asking for help. And sometimes when you don't like to ask for help, you get into situations like how I was in with a bad manufacturer that didn't want to work with us, that were, delaying our orders and, things of that nature. But I feel that if I was able to ask somebody and try to ask for help or reach out to more people, someone that was probably in the industry before me to mentor me, I think that probably would have helped me a little bit better. But like I said, I still appreciate it because I've learned so much, and I can help the next person coming up in the next generation not make the same mistakes that I made.
What about you, Jermaine? What was the one mistake that if you could get a do-over, you would?
I'm really like Monique, and I've made a lot of mistakes, but I do feel that the mistakes make you stronger. Mm-hmm. You don't make them twice. I think that what I really have no regrets, Harold. None.
And I'm not talking about regrets.
I think those mistakes were necessary in the growth.
Right.
I think that they were necessary so that I can learn what not to do. My main mistake was maybe working with certain people that I should not have worked with, trusting too much. And believing people for their face value. And sometimes that costs you in the long run. So I'm a little bit more cautious mm-hmm. as to who I work with. I partners, you got to be very careful when you engage in partnerships. So I think I really can't think of any mistakes that I made that I really regret that had a really negative
effect. But certainly that is
effect.
A lesson learned when you were talking about, for example, partners and, mm-hmm. and as Monique was talking about dealing with the next steps, people outside of your control and learning something that, chemicals and mixing in your kitchen, that's one thing, but learning about manufacturing and distribution and those kinds of things, that really isn't something that that they teach in nursing school, mm-hmm. and you really obviously had to hunker down and learn through the school of hard knocks how to do that. And right. doing it in 2 years, it certainly is admirable. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Andre, you called back from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. Hi. Help. I need help. So I have a 12-year-old, and I take her everywhere to get her hair done. And it seems like for the first 3 days, her hair is beautiful. But then it curls back up and gets thicker and thicker, and just don't know what to do. And she hates to get it done. So I'm looking for a product that we can use that's going to be something simple for her to use on
your
daily basis.
Andre, my producer is writing to me saying that your daughter is biracial. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so how would you describe the texture of her hair? And that's my question, and I'll have the experts kind of jump in with that.
So when it's washed and it's blow-dried, it's really straight.
Mm-hmm.
Silky, but seems like when she goes to sleep, she wears sort of a hairnet. And a couple of days it's fine, but then it gets really thick, and what's called the
swells.
So her hair is naturally curly, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, and when you say you take her to get her hair done, are you taking her to get her hair blown out?
Get it washed and blown out, yes.
Okay, and she's 12, right?
Yes.
So why not let her embrace her natural texture of curls?
I try that too. She doesn't like her hair around her ears. She says it makes her hot. So it's like, you know, it's always up. And, you know, just it to me, she's a beautiful girl. And I'm like, your hair. What can we do about this?
I think you should show her some pictures of little girls that look like her that have her hair texture, and show her how beautiful it is, because I'm sure that her natural curls are very beautiful. And what she needs to learn is how to embrace and work with her natural texture of hair, because that's the thing with curly hair, and especially because she's 12, you're going to keep getting her hair done, and they're going to keep blowing it out, and what you're going to do is you're going to damage her natural curl pattern. And then once she gets older and she's, you know, she gets to college and she sees that, you know, other girls are wearing their hair natural, she's going to want to wear her hair natural, because that's the trend. Let's face it, like, everybody's starting to go natural, and she's going to want to embrace those natural curls, and, you know, she's going to look up and her hair is going to be damaged. So I think you should start with showing her photos of other girls her age that have curly hair like her, because I'm sure her hair is beautiful. And of course, we have products to help make her hair more manageable and for you guys to maintain her curls better. But I think that it starts with teaching her to embrace her natural texture and letting her love her hair first, and then figuring out how to maintain it.
I would imagine also peer pressure. 12-year-old girls, such a critical time for them in, you know, in their development. And, you know, when she has, you know, this unusual texture of hair, I'm sure that there are, you know, other things that come into play.
It's more normal now. Mm-hmm. The young people are embracing their curls. But, Andre, I would recommend that you come to Ubiquitous this weekend and really get educated on your daughter. Bring your daughter, and you can go from booth to booth. They are willing and ready to educate, mm-hmm. and to tell you about the various products. Monique will be there in her booth amongst other manufacturers. And it really would be worth your time. What part of Virginia are you from?
I'm in Haymarket.
Oh, not that far, right?
No. What time does it open tomorrow?
At 11 o'clock. So are we going to see you?
Yes, because, well, I'm going to try to. She has a hair appointment at 3 because school starts on Monday. So I'm waiting there as the doors open to get her in and and figure out what we're going to do, if we're going to make that hair appointment or not.
I'm telling you, she would really see other people that look like her and how beautiful her curls are naturally. Mm-hmm. And the right products will make all the difference in the world. I would strongly suggest you may not go and get her hair blown out.
Yeah,
let
her
come.
To
yeah, bring her here.
I need to take a break. Andre, you can find out more about Ubiquitous online at ubiquitousexpo.com. Hey, you know what? Maybe you need to cancel that appointment and just see what happens. You know,
right.
you just never know. I need to take a break. Thank you, Andre, for giving us a call. Good luck to you and your daughter. We'll be back in just a moment talking more about the business of Black beauty. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the business of Black beauty. I want to talk a little bit, Monique, about how you grew the business and at what point you decided I can quit my job and do this full time, overtime, because obviously this is not a 9-to-5 pursuit.
Mm-hmm. So I decided to quit my job. Like I said, I started My Yellow Organics in May of 2014. I decided that I was going to quit my job in May of 2014 when I launched, because that's how passionate I was about my vision. And, you know, I always tell people that if God gave me the vision, he's equipped me with everything that I need to be successful. So I believe in speaking things into existence. Like I said, when I started this company in May, I told my husband, I said, I'm going to quit my job in November of 2014. And he said, you're not going to quit your job. You know, you've worked so hard to be a nurse. This is your career. You're not going to just walk away from nursing like that. And I said, I'm going to quit my job in November of 2014. And I made sure that I worked hard and I did everything that I needed to do, because not only did I have to prove to him that I wanted to quit my job, but I had to prove it to myself too, because I actually typed out my resignation and dated it for November. And that's why I say speak things into existence, visualize it. I believe in vision boards and visualizing your future. And me looking at that resignation letter was my motivation to stick to my promise that I made to myself.
But your husband was working.
He was working as well, too.
Yeah, and he had a lucrative position.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like if you quit your job, you'd be sitting on the curb. You did have support.
Yes, I had support, but I'm very independent. And I don't know.
Lord. This show is going so well. Where's Melvin? Melvin! You cannot sit here and tell me, Monique, that I'm very independent when you have a working husband, that if this business failed, you were not going to starve.
If I had to move back home with my mom to get my business off the ground, then that's what I would have done.
But you didn't have to do that.
I didn't have to do
I was blessed and fortunate enough
not to have to do that.
Okay.
But me quitting my job was not saying that I'm going to quit because I just want to sit on my butt and play around and figure out how to start a business. Me quitting my job was, I know that I'm going to be successful, not, maybe if it doesn't work out, I still have my husband to fall back on. That was never my mentality, or that wasn't an option to me.
But he wasn't going to let you sit on the curb.
But I never thought about that. That wasn't in my mind. But
if you're used to two incomes coming in,
exactly.
And you live to that
because
level,
we had a lifestyle based off of
two incomes.
And that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, for example, a lot of people that are looking to start their own businesses, whatever those businesses happen to be, you got a lot of single people out here who they may have the, you know, the vim and vigor to do that. And there are mistakes that can be made. Some of those mistakes can be costly. They can delay your product. They can delay your income. But if you do have a supportive partner, and I think that's the reality of it, you have a lifestyle. But sometimes this isn't a difference between going to dinner every weekend or not. Sometimes this is the difference between being set out on the street and losing your home or losing your place if this is not successful. So let us be clear that you did have, you know, the support and you know, and God bless you for the success, right. You know, because he quit his job, didn't he?
He did quit his job.
yes, but you know what? I just recently heard of Billy Blanks Jr. Mm-hmm. And he is now a millionaire.
The fitness expert.
Yeah, but his son. And his father didn't help him. And he was in homeless, him and his wife. And they went on Shark Tank. And very impressive story. But, you know, but for Monique to quit her job, it says a lot because you're stepping out on faith. Mm-hmm. It's not easy, you know, because even when I quit my job to start my business, my husband said to me, we just bought this house.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recommend it.
Right.
And being who I am, mm-hmm. that drove me more. And mm-hmm. so I was determined not to fail. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to have that burning desire to want to be successful. And failure is no option.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you, Harold, the difference between the millennial entrepreneurs and when we were coming up, me, mm-hmm. I'll say, you know, our mindset was a little different. You thought about survival. They think success.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's a big difference. You know, these young people are now thinking success. No, it's not an option. If you can't tell me yes, who can? And they're not backing down. And they're going, again, they're going directly to the consumer. That's economics 101. They are absolutely developing the demand. And then these retailers are just an outlet for them to put their products. But they were making money on e-commerce and was living a very, very successful and healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, talk to me about that, Monique, because as we know, brick and mortar retail outlets have had to adjust to the Amazon.coms, to the eBays of the world. How have you been able to, just in this 2 years, been able to keep pace with the ever-changing field of buying and selling?
Well, when you say buying and selling, meaning us selling mm-hmm. to brick-and-mortar stores?
Right.
Well, I think it was important to me to build a big online presence first before we went into brick and mortar stores because, you know, you can go on the show, then you can have your products there. But if nobody knows about you, the products are not going to sell. So it was important to me to build a relationship with our consumers first before entering in stores. And if I'm not sure you're probably not familiar with our story, but when we first entered into brick and mortar, which was Sally's, that was our first retail, mm-hmm. we sold out the first day that we launched in stores. They tested us. They wanted to test us in 95 stores. All 95 stores sold out the day that we announced that we were now in Sally's. And that's because of our strong online presence and our connection with the consumer.
That's a good problem to have,
yeah.
Sold out, but were you surprised? Did you have to make an adjustment after that sellout and say, oh boy, we need to make some adjustments in this business plan?
No, we didn't have to make adjustments and I was not surprised at all because I knew it was going to happen. It was probably a surprise to the brick and mortar store that we sold to, and they may have had to make adjustments, in which they did make adjustments, and they increased our store count, in which they normally don't do that. But to us, it wasn't a surprise. Like, we expected that.
They did. Mm-hmm. And they went from 95 to over 1,000 doors in less than 3 months. That's
yeah.
unheard of.
And now we're in over 2,700 Sally doors in less than 6 months. And that doesn't happen.
Jermaine, talk to me about the personal cost of being in business. Having, you know, known you for many years, entrepreneurial pursuits, again, as I said, this is not 9 to 5.
No.
This is actually 9 a.m. to 9 a.m. the next day. You know, how do you balance, you know, the work home situation? I mean, at some point, you know, you have to take a break. Is that something that you have to plan? Is it something you have to work in, or do you just have to kind of do it and shut off the phone and the like for a moment?
You do have to plan. And we have a panel discussion, and Monique is on this panel, Build My Brand, Manage My Life,
mm-hmm.
because you being an entrepreneur is not a 9-to-5. Everybody thinks that we make sometimes entrepreneurs make it look easy. Mm-hmm. It is not easy because it's a major sacrifice. I miss a lot of things that are going on with my family, sometimes my friends, because I'm traveling and I miss it. And I have to force myself a lot of times to shut it off. I was at my son's baseball games with my laptop. You know, I'm at the game because I truly understand, too, that there's no do-overs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my friends and my family understand that I'm very committed to my family, but I'm also very committed to my business. I want to be successful. So there's just some sacrifices that you must make in being in business. You know, you have to learn how to balance it all. This last 2 weeks, I've been getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning working because I have to take care of my core business, which is GBL sales. And I have a client like Melvin that wants to know where his numbers are at 9 o'clock in the morning. And he calls you anytime at night if he thinks of something and try to plan for this major show that we're putting on. So it's a mindset. It's a heart. And it's not for the faint. It's not for, I'd say entrepreneurship is not for chumps. It is not.
I only have about a minute left, but Monique, what is your next move if you're willing to share in the evolution of your business?
My next move is basically to continue to expand, to continue to grow Mayelle Organics to be we're already a global beauty brand, but to be an even more global, if that's even a word, beauty brand. You know, we want to be a household name. So when you see the Mayelle logo, the girl with the flower in her hair, that you know and you associate that with, you know, our mission, which is to empower, excite, and educate women about healthy hair. And basically just to spread that and continue to spread the word about who we are as a company, who we are as a brand, and to just continue to empower women to take care of their hair and to take care of their bodies.
Okay, well, I want to thank both of you for coming in, Jermaine Bold Leftridge and Monique Rodriguez. Ubiquitous.
Yes.
It's this weekend. Saturday and Sunday. And it's not just about hair.
No.
It's about skin. It's about makeup. And it's also about health as well. So you don't want to miss it if you're interested in stepping up your beauty game. You can find it online at ubiquitousexpo.com. And, of course, Monique Rodriguez will be there. Real quick, Monique, what's your website again, please?
The website is Mayelle Organics, and that's Miellele Organics with an S.com.
Thank you so much. Good luck with Ubiquitous this weekend. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, August 26th. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Taylor Thomas, Troy Johnson, Millette Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Atkins, engineers Craig Fowler, and Bobby Adams. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at